This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
So I had a dream last night.
Uh-oh.
That Natalie and I were sitting on the couch. We're in the middle of watching Deadwood right now. We're rewatching it because it's it feels nicer than what's happening in reality.
Yeah, right on time. 5 years late.
5 years late. And I had a dream last night that Natalie and I were watching it, and that the whole thing was Al Swearengen was sucking on this prostitute's breasts, trying to get milk out of them. Wait. And he kept turning around and being like, "Can't get any milk out of these tits."
Were you hard when you woke up?
That's what Natalie asked, and I don't think so, but I wake up hard anyway.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. We already heard something we don't want to hear from Henry. I never want to think about that ever again. Really, I apologize for prompting it.
That's not all that different from Deadwood the show.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
There's a whole scene where he's getting a violent blowjob from a woman. He's making a Shakespearean soliloquy.
I think you were just watching Deadwood.
I was. Yes, I just fell asleep while watching Deadwood. I just think between Deadwood and all of the prostitute reading I'm doing with Jack the Ripper, it's all just in the brain now, and it's just, I've already thought about how, like, you could suck milk on an adult's breasts.
I don't want to hear it anymore, Henry. Good Lord. All right. Yes, Deadwood.
I will say, you know how people say they hate to hear people's dreams?
Yes.
That's why.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Specifically yours. All right. Well, let's go to another hellacious time in human history other than Deadwood. Let's jump right back in to Jack the Ripper Part 3.
Oh, yeah. And we are picking up the night of the double event. That would be the murder of Catherine Eddowes and the murder of Elizabeth Stride. That would be the double event. So after they found those bodies, a couple hours afterwards at 2:55, 5 a.m., another discovery was made. PC Alfred Long found a ripped piece of apron covered in blood and feces lying outside of Wentworth Model Dwellings on Goulston Street.
Now, here's the thing about the UK, which I don't understand, or if this is an old-timey thing. They always would write feces as faces.
Faces.
Right? F-A-E-C-E-S. So that's a problem. I look at it and it makes me think of fairies. It makes me think of like magic when we would talk about it. Yeah. M-A-G-I-C-K-E. And it's just being like, is this just the new age way of spelling shit?
Yeah, it sort of sounds like an Egyptian god too. Faces. I praise faces. It also, why does he have dookie on his apron? Is that like a traditional thing where they wash their hands and then the apron's long enough after they go to the bathroom to just like, they're like, well, it works on the meat. It works on my butt.
I'm wearing my own toilet paper. That's the most economical use of my outfit here. Also, I don't need to wear undies either because it's like a bathroom door.
The cleanest market in town.
The feces came from the body. Because they apparently, was one thing that they talked about, is that when they found Liz Stride's body, is that not only had she been deeply dismembered, but she had also pooped on the street.
So it was like when David Spade and Chris Farley were eating the shrimp in Tommy Boy, and Chris Farley is, and David Spade's like, this one was full. It was like that?
Yes.
Oh, man, I don't like it.
Now, the reason why Wentworth Model Dwellings was important in this context is that it was in a largely Jewish section of Whitechapel, and the building was inhabited almost entirely by Jewish people. This was important because of the message that was written on the wall right above where the apron lay. The message said,
"The Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing."
Wait, hold on, what? So are they to be blamed?
They say it's Cockney doublespeak is what they're talking about. So they use a lot of double negatives and Cockney slang. So what it says is, "The Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing."
So are they blamed for something?
Yeah, the Jews are the men that will not be blamed for nothing.
Now I get it. Yeah. Thank you, Marcus.
See, completely it's about the effects. I'm sorry, I was saying it too clear.
Yeah, and that was with Jews spelled J-U-W-E-S. Now, there's a lot of speculation as far as to what that misspelling means. Now,
there's a lot of speculation, Marcus. There's a lot of it. There's literally books of it. I'm holding two of them in my hands. Both of them are 900 pages long. Let's get into it.
Just about the misspelling, huh?
Oh, yeah. And it could be the simplest explanation is that the Ripper was illiterate.
Yeah, he's a moron.
And he didn't know how to spell Jews.
That's disgusting. How dare you shame Ripper? That's Ripper shame.
I don't know. If you're not intelligent enough to spell the race that you don't like, you have to like them. That's my official position on that. How can you be anti-Jewish if you don't even know how to spell the name?
It also could be that Jews, J-U-W-E-S, was a secret Masonic message. Ooh. But
you want to start it without starting it, Marcus?
I'm going to start it without starting it. That's going to be a little teaser for episode 4.
I've got a nerd alert lined up right behind me, guys, if you get too much into this.
Now, it seems like if you're interested in true crime at all, that a photograph of this message would be just as recognizable as the Mary Kelly crime scene photo, as photography was very much in use in law enforcement at this time. But you've got to remember that opinions of the Jewish population among East Enders at this point were not very high, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And the message was written right in the middle of a popular Jewish merchant area, and at any moment, genteel purchasers were sure to show up and see the message.
Now, it's very interesting, because also not only was Whitechapel in general a big center of the Jewish population of London itself, but this little area was like the complete total epicenter of Jewish life in Whitechapel. And what was interesting is that they weren't so much mad that the Jewish people were there celebrating another religion. It was that they lived completely in a European style. Like, it was very open, it was out on the streets, and people resented the way they lived. They resented the fact that they came in and didn't adhere to like English societal measures and the way that they live, which is getting pissed drunk in the sleep, fucking getting pissed drunk in the street, beating prostitutes all day.
Right. Well, it takes a little while to assimilate. What was the what was it written in? Was it blood? I mean, they didn't
chalk.
Paint. Oh, it was in chalk.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It was written in chalk.
I was thinking it could be feces, but I'm happy to hear it's chalk.
This right here. This is the logic of the police officers. When the genteels saw this message, whatever the hell it meant, it was possible that it would have given the genteel population of the East End just the excuse they needed to run riot, and that was the last thing the Metropolitan Police wanted to deal with, and so it was decided after much debate that the message would be washed away before a photographer had a chance to capture it. But there is no doubt whatsoever that it was written by the killer, as the fabric found matched perfectly with a piece ripped away from the apron of Catherine Eddowes.
But at the same time, it could have just been there in the first place. That graffiti was written on there to be anti-Semitic, possibly, and it could have just been there, and the killer just dropped it as he was running away trying to clean the cum off his pants. So that's the problem.
That is true. I take it back. There is plenty of doubt that because among Whitechapel, there was quite a bit of anti-Semitic graffiti just written, and it could be that it was just a – because what it was is the – they could tell tell that the cloth was used to wipe off the knife.
But okay, so yes. Then this implies that the killer would be a Gentile if they're against the Jewish people, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but then how would they start to blame the Jewish people for being Jack the Ripper? Or was it a Jewish person who purposely did that to make it look like a Gentile did it?
Look at the statement.
I don't know anymore.
Look at the statement. Listen, the Jews were the men that will not be named for nothing. It sounds like a spiteful message from a Jewish person that say that no matter what happens here, the Jews will be blamed. Whatever happens in this town. So it could be, and this goes into weird alternative theories about Jack the Ripper, about whether or not he was a Jewish man that was bitter about the prostitute population in Whitechapel and wanted to do something about it, or it was a Jewish man that was killing prostitutes in order to bring the intention of the government to Whitechapel to come and help them. Basically, it's this idea that maybe Jack the Ripper was killing prostitutes and getting attention and writing these messages in order to get government attention so people to come in and clean up the streets.
Interesting.
They call that the social reformer theory. Now, it is possible that the murders would have passed into history as nothing more than a sordid footnote had the perpetrator been known simply as the Whitechapel murderer. Or even if he had just been known as Leather Apron, as cool as Leather Apron is.
Very cool.
One of the reasons why this case has endured for well over 100 years all comes down to branding. It all comes down to the name Jack the Ripper.
It's like, cool.
It's cool. I mean, it's cool.
It's like Shaka Khan.
Shaka Khan. Good point.
Yeah, it's cool. It's catchy. It tells you everything that you need. Jack the Ripper, the name itself is why this has endured for so long. And that name came from a series of letters received the day of the double event. Just hours before the Elizabeth Stride murder, Scotland Yard was given a letter that had supposedly been sent to the desk of journalist Tom Bulling of the Central News Agency. The letter, written in red ink and addressed to the boss, reads as follows.
It went to Bruce Springsteen?
Exactly. Yeah, it's 150 years too early. I'm sorry. We were all looking for the troubadour of New Jersey for forever.
Dear boss, I keep on hearing the police have caught me, but they won't fix me just yet. I have laughed when they look so clever and talk about being on the right track. That joke about Leather Apron gave me real fits. I am down on whores, and I shan't quit ripping them until I do get buckled. Grand work the last job was. I gave the lady no time to squeal. How can they catch me now? I love my work and I want to start again. You will soon hear of me with my funny little games. I saved some of the proper red stuff in a ginger beer bottle over the last job to write with, but it went thick like glue and I can't use it. Red ink is fit enough, I hope. Ha ha! The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ear off and send to the police officers just for jolly, wouldn't you? Keep this letter back till I do a bit more work, then give it out straight. My knife's so nice and sharp, I want to get to work right away if I get a chance. Good luck. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. Don't mind me giving the trade name. P.S. Wasn't good enough to post this before I got all the red ink off my hands. Curse it, no luck yet. They say I'm a doctor now. Ha ha, and away I go!
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I know we're doing the suspects in the next episode, but I think I solved it. It's judging by the knife work and the letter, it's Julia Childs.
It's absolutely lovely. You just take the whore's uterus and you cook it in a bit of Chardonnay, and it's just absolutely scandisciplined. Scandisciplined is my new word, because I'm fucking hammered.
Constantly hammered.
Now, this letter probably would have been passed off as one of the many hoaxes going around at the time, if not for one line.
The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ears off and send to the police officers just for jolly, wouldn't you?
I gotta say, clip sounds worse than cut.
Yeah.
Like the idea of being clipped off.
Yeah, well, because it's a clipping that is much more animalistic.
Right.
Clipping is something you do to a sheep. You clip a sheep's balls off, you know? Like
Well, don't do that.
You clip the ears of a dog.
Right.
Like that's why clip sounds so much more disturbing, because it implies that he doesn't see these women as humans.
I'm going to name my first child Clip. Clip Kissel.
Well, so you're going to be like Sarah Palin?
Yeah.
Naming your kids after fucking sounds that the gun makes? My other question is you clip the ears of a dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. All those dogs you see fighting, the pit bulls, those are all clipped.
Yeah, Doberman Pinschers, a lot of people clip those ears.
And the tails of many Doberman Pinschers. It's an awful practice. I'm against it.
Yeah, it's cruelty.
Dogs are not paper dolls.
I know.
Dogs are cute. Borky died.
My middle brother, he had a cat named Charcoal, and he used to clip her whiskers. And then, of course, as you got older, you realize that's their main feeling. That's how they feel. So she was in hell living with my middle brother.
Oh, yeah, she was living in Saw.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he wanted to have them just so. I don't know. It's kind of a strange thing he did.
Now, if you'll remember, concerning the ear clipping, one of Catherine Eddowes' earlobes had indeed been clipped, so cops took this one a little more seriously than the other letters they had received. At a loss, cops printed the letter in the papers and made gigantic copies of it and posted them outside police stations, hoping someone would recognize the handwriting.
Now, this has got to be a tough decision for a police department to make.
Yeah.
Do you do the press or do you not do the press? What my personal belief at this point in history would say, don't do it.
Well, at this point, they had no idea what to do because this was the first time they were dealing with the press.
Right.
So there was
An uneasy relationship with the press up until this point, because they're constantly fighting, like leads getting out and people coming to them with information that they have been prepped with ahead of time. So now you're getting all these people confessing because there have been the details of the crimes have been already put out in the newspapers.
Sure.
So it's very strange.
So the police want to get their message out. Yeah.
Yeah. But unless this letter came from somebody in the newspapers.
Yeah, because this whole thing, it was a huge mistake, as they were soon receiving dozens of letters a day, with anywhere between 300 and 1,400 received overall by the end of it, depending on who you read. And that right there is a wonderful example of just how fucking confusing it is to research Jack the Ripper. The gap between 300 and 1,400 is pretty goddamn wide.
It's a big gap.
It's a huge gap.
It's 1,100.
And also, every witness is hammered.
Yeah.
Every witness is belligerently hammered and already a known liar. Everybody's a liar and a thief, and everything's pitch black. And so they're all just saying just whatever. Like, they're just saying whatever off the top of their head. They don't like the way the guy served its fish and chips because it was too soggy, or maybe it was too good because he thought the fish and chips were too good, and that's suspicious. It's got to be sausage-ick. It's got to be. I've never had good proper malt vinegar on my fries before.
Yeah, could be a killer.
The only acceptable reason to interrupt a podcast? Your dog. That was your dog saying thank you for BarkBox. You can take a minute now. You bet your dog. You're going to learn about Bark. It's the company dedicated to making dogs happy. Yay! Every month, BarkBox designs and delivers a whole new collection of toys and treats just for your best bud. No, Wendy, I can't get you a whip. You're too cute for weapons. Every treat is made with yummy, healthy, all-natural ingredients like pumpkin and sweet potato. Mmm, tubers! My dogs love their toys selectively. But BarkBox sends good little ones for their little tiny mouths. They have little mouths, but strong, big spirits. So they fight over the little toys. I imagine they think that they are hunting and going after little bugs and rats. And oh, they love their life and they love what BarkBox brings. Because BarkBox brings the bark and puts it in a box. Yep. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/LEFT. My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown.
All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Yeah, we do. Do you love saving money? Oh my God, you bet! Then Philo may be your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. That's amazing! No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. It's just a better way to watch TV. Get with it, people. Philo has an unlimited DVR for 1 year. Save all your favorite shows so you can watch on your own schedule. Philo allows for multiple profiles and multiple streams, meaning that your children or significant other can't ruin your queue. Never miss a minute of shows like, oh, RuPaul's Drag Race. You're going to watch it. You're going to love it. You're going to get involved with it. And it's an extravaganza. You're going to love it. With Philo, you can start watching in seconds for less money and less hassle. Try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/left. That's philo.tv/left to get 50% off your first month.
And speaking of Saucy Jack, the next one is considered to be possibly genuine, is known as the Saucy Jack postcard. It was received on October 1st, the day after the double event. This is what it reads.
I was not codding, dear old boss, when I gave you the tip. You'll hear about Saucy Jackie's work tomorrow's double event this time. Number one squealed a bit, couldn't finish straight off. Huh. Not the time to get ears for police. Thanks for keeping last letter back till I get to work again, Jack the Ripper. Ha ha ha! And away again!
Sounds like a J. Edgar Hoover letter. You know he's wearing a dress during that.
Saucy Jackie.
Saucy, ooh.
Oh, I'm sitting on a bowling pin while I write this. Oh, sweet dear Saucy Jackie covered with his own Saucy Jackie.
Nothing wrong with that.
Oh! I'm as horny as a deer.
I don't know if deer are that horny, but...
Oh, have you never seen a deer fuck another deer? It's atrocious. Ho-ho, I love to watch it. Goodbye. Ho-ho.
Bye-bye.
The people who argue that the Saucy Jack postcard is genuine point to the fact that the postcard described the double event before it was released in the papers, but what those people ignore is the possibility that it was invented by the papers themselves.
What? You're crazy. You're crazy, dog meat.
It is
There's
now-
no way the-
these fucking bent Cockney assholes were trying to sell newspapers.
No way that's possible.
It's pretty widely believed now by most reputable historians that these letters were actually written by journalist Tom Bulling, the guy who gave them to the Metropolitan Police in the first place, or possibly his editor. And the whole thing was just a ruse to add a little bit more sauce to the murders and to keep the story going.
We got fake news.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Well, I mean, really, the concept of journalistic integrity came from fighting back against these sorts of stories, not only in England, but also in America. The whole fake news phenomenon is that we're just going through cycles. We're just at the next phase of fake news. This is something that's been going on for well over a century, ever since newspapers were invented.
I don't read any fake news. I only read U.S. The U.S. Weekly Report.
U.S. World News and Report.
U.S. World News.
I only read Empire News.
Why wouldn't you?
All I read is that Metro paper that they give out for free on the subway.
That's right.
And it's great because they'll tell you all sorts of things. They movie reviews, what subway lines
you're on
are doing bad.
Yeah. Hey, actually, I want to thank all the people at Metro Boston for a great story on us.
Yeah, that was so
my
nice.
Buddy Brendan McGurk. Thank you very much, Brendan.
Thank you.
Not fake news.
Not fake news.
No, the most disturbing letter and the one most likely not written by journalists is the infamous From Hell letter.
Oh, my God. How do you get paper from hell? It's so hot there. It's so wild.
Well, wow.
Yikes. Tough day to be a post office.
I think I may have just come up with this, but you know, like a house, it's just a place for your stuff, right? And you know, your whole life is you go out and you just get more stuff. And you just want to put it in when you go to a hotel, it's just another place for your stuff. And you're bringing your stuff from one place, got your stuff. From another place, got stuff.
Uh-huh. That's George Carlin bit.
Yes.
Very good, Henry.
The From Hell letter was sent to George Lusk, the head of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee.
Now, to me, this is a big point, right? All of these other letters have been sent to the newspapers, right? Which is easy to do. With George Lusk, you have to know that he's the head of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. Like, you have to know that he's setting that up, right? So it's possibly somebody from the neighborhood sent this letter. Somebody who knows what's going on in Whitechapel sent the letter, possibly a member of the vigilance group or Jack the Ripper himself.
Right.
Quite possibly.
One and the same, maybe?
Could be.
You fucking idiot.
But of course, it happens all the time.
But actually, journalists and the police, they weren't the only ones getting letters. People were sending letters all over England claiming to be Jack the Ripper. They would send them to magistrates, businesses, hotels, just private individuals, just to anybody. Because it's just like every single crime, unsolved crime that goes on, you get this. We get this in a Boston Strangler. We got this in the Night Stalk. You get this with BTK. Anybody looking to settle a personal beef or somebody looking to just scare someone else, they're going to take advantage of it. This has been going on for centuries.
Oh, I get letters from Capital One all the time. And I'm like, you're not going to scare me, Capital One. I'm not opening it. Okay.
If Jack the Ripper shows us anything, it's that people do not change.
Right.
We are the exact same now as we were in 1888. And, you know, us here in America are exactly like people back in England. Like, it's people are the same all over, and it never changes.
Well, it's both really depressing and also very encouraging.
It's comforting.
When you look back, you see it again and again and again. It's like we're doing the same shit. We're in the middle of, that's why it's like between watching Deadwood and reading about London 1888, I'm feeling that all of that same feelings now. Like, we're in this like weird new time period.
We don't dump sewage out of our windows.
Not yet.
You know? And I don't think we're ever going to do that again.
Well, I mean,
maybe
human...
You don't.
Yeah, I mean...
What, you do? Well, no one can see your face, but he's saying that he does with his eyes. Fine.
Well, the reason why the From Hell letter was taken seriously was because it arrived with something a little extra. Half a human kidney.
Ooh.
You get that in a butcher shop if you ask for a little something extra. You will get a little piece of kidney, and it's actually really nice. You fried up some onions. It's really nice.
I think it's a human kidney, though.
Yeah, it's a human. It is definitely a human kidney.
Didn't
we know
mailman,
for a fact.
Didn't the mailman feel it was a little soggy and puffy?
Oh, you can send body parts through the mail. You just wrap it up extra, extra, extra.
It looks like someone sent another set of nuts in a goddamn envelope.
Seems true.
I honestly thought my life was fucking bad. You know, I get up every day, my fucking male rucksack is covered in shit. My fucking male boots covered in shit. I gotta go from place to place, people dumping beers on me because they say the mail is run by wizards. And I'd sit in here like, if my mail was run by wizards, would I be this fat?
You'd make a wish and get thinner, I suppose.
Harder and harder it is to be a mailman, see? Now I'm a fucking organ delivery service there.
This is what the From Hell letter said.
From Hell. Mr. Lusk, I'll send you off the kidney I took from one woman and preserved it for you. Oof. The other piece I fried and ate it. It was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife that took it out if you only wait a while longer. Signed, catch me when you can, Mr. Lusk.
It's the fat guy from Nuns on the Run. Testicle, spectacles, wallet, and watch. That's who did it. They're looking for a fat dude dressed as a nun. Why didn't I exist back then?
You always think that it's the fat guy from Nuns on the Run.
He did a lot. It's a fat guy. That's a fat guy move. No one thin would be like, I have to clarify, I did eat the other half and it was delicious.
I did eat it, and I would tell you, to be honest, it could have been better. I honestly wish it tasted better.
You could almost hear the letter breathing heavy. It is definitely Jack the Ripper was fat.
Who killed Kennedy? The fat guy from Nuns on the Run.
Nuns on the
Run. Who was the Zodiac killer? Fat guy from Nuns on the Run.
That poor man is sitting, because so many anonymous letters that poor actor has received, just like sitting open on me like, I'm not the Zodiac killer. I'm a character performer. Honestly, I haven't worked in a long time. I'm mostly doing voiceover now. It's for Go-Gurt commercials. Oh. I don't understand why I get this harassed.
Well, don't harass the guy. I mean, but he is guilty. But
I say harass until he fucking dies.
No, he might already be dead, actually. I'm not quite sure.
He could be dead.
Yes.
No, and Lusk found the letter. He thought it was just a joke, thinking the kidney was from a dead sheep, which...
This is funny. This is funny now. Yes, okay. I'm happy they did this. You know, to be honest, I've been looking for a bit of lightness. It's nice to have a break.
Yeah, I guess the Kathy comic strip wasn't around yet, so you had to read something on Sunday mornings.
He did, though, go awake, open it, and go, ack.
Ack. Mondays.
The Lusk kept the kidney for a full day, wondering what to do with it, kept it in his desk drawer, before a buddy convinced him they should take it over to a local doctor to see if it was human, just for kicks.
All of these fucking Whitechapel people are so casually horrible.
Right.
He's the good guy. He's the guy that the local fucking head of the what's his name? He's Ned Beatty from the Burbs. And he's sitting there just playing with the human kidney all day. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Does it talk to a police officer? Does it mean, like, I don't know what to do with it? He got a nude picture in the mail.
It's just using it as a stress reliever, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. And so they took the kidney over to the local doctor, but the local doctor was out, so they took it to another local doctor who ruled that it was inconclusive. So those three took it over to the London hospital, where it was examined and confirmed to be human. And then all four of them all bundled over together to H Division headquarters and delivered it to the proper authorities after taking a human kidney from place to place to place on one sunny Sunday afternoon.
It is like a critter poll of dumb fucks. And it's just it just gets bigger and bigger and dumber as it goes.
Well, because that's when the cops, they couldn't handle Whitechapel, right? So they just gave it to the citizens. There's like a couple of you at Aberline, right? The inspector, the guy who was ahead, who was really into shit, who's walking around and doing the best he can, who was supposed to have been promoted to Scotland Yard. It was like the story of, it's like a movie story, where Aberline essentially was a super cop that was supposed to, he was getting very quickly promoted, and they're like, wait, actually, we need to send you to Whitechapel to go investigate the Jack the Ripper crimes. And he's like, fuck, because he's got to go into the worst part of the world.
Yeah.
And they just gave all of the crime solving fucking duties to these drunken idiots. Mm.
And then Mel Gibson was his partner. The whole
can't
thing
believe
fell
he's
apart.
There. Yeah, just calling everybody just sugar tits.
Oh my
but then
God.
There's five women named sugar tits just in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, they compete with Nick Nolte and Danny Glover for the case. Wild stuff.
Now, there is a misconception that the kidney was, quote, ginny, meaning gin, full of gin, and that it had come from a female, which points towards it coming from Catherine Eddowes, whose left kidney was taken by the Ripper. Oh. However, the ginny line was actually a misquote by the press, as the doctor who had examined the kidney had actually said that it had been preserved in spirits rather than being spirited itself, so to speak.
So they put it in a jar filled with gin.
Yeah. No, the guy who had cut wherever the human kidney came from before it was sent to George Lusk, it was preserved in wine.
Oh, that's kind of
technically, yeah. If you cook it honestly, kidney, a little marinade in some wine with like onions and currants and stuff like that, and you cook it up with like honestly, that would probably be really tasty. I had this thing in Atlanta called a deviled pig's kidney, where the waiter came up and he's just like, "We got some suckling pigs in this morning, and the chef wanted to do something fun, so he made these like this little like deviled pig's kidney dish, and ooh, it was good."
When they saw you walk in the door, that chef got so rock hard. And he was like, "I think I found the dumpy shithead that's going to eat this disgusting food that should be banned in the country." My God. It reminds me of that drink. I think it's in Ireland or something, Kiss the Toe, where they have that old rotten toe.
I think it's in Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's a Canadian thing.
Oh, a Canadian thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very fun.
Now, while this is pointed to, the From Hell letter, while it's pointed to as the most credible Jack the Ripper artifact, a lot of opinions say that it was most likely a prank done by a medical student at the same London hospital where it was identified as human.
Hmm. Unless it was done by a doctor himself who worked at the London hospital, if we want to get into that as well. Right. And that they purposely downgraded the spelling of the letter, which we've seen now throughout all of serial killer history, right? Where it's like when they write letters, like look at the BTK letters. Hmm. They're purposely misspelled to sort of throw you off the track. So you can't compare the handwriting to other pieces of handwriting.
Yeah, but they misspell, like they will misspell easy words, but they will spell they'll spell harder words correctly.
Cornucopia. Yes. That's a hard word.
Like she had a cornucopia of guts that I played with.
But he misspelled guts. He went G-E-T-S, gets.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in the From Hell letter, it's like he misspells nice. He spells it N-I-S-E, but on knife, he makes sure to put the K in there. Mm. He also misspelled knife, but he spelled it K-N-I-F and left the E off, but he remembered to put the K in there. It's weird.
Which is the
like
hard
that.
Part of the word.
That's the hard part of the word.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Now, the entire month of October passed without a single murder attributed to the Ripper.
Can I actually read? There's one factoid I had heard about that was really interesting. A part of the reason why this started really freaking people out at this time period is that the year before, in 1887, Whitechapel only had 6 murders. And that this rash of murders was actually something that they weren't used to. Like this amount of murders, which is why people were really freaking out.
Yeah, because, I mean, Whitechapel wasn't like a murder capital or anything.
Well,
like,
sounds like it.
Murders did happen, but it was mostly just high. It was mostly burglaries, assaults.
Beatings.
Yeah.
Drinking. Right. Drunken fights.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a horrible place. It was just the worst place in the world to be, but you wouldn't get murdered.
Yeah.
Which is actually almost worse.
I mean, or did they just call, like, a knife to the heart or a baseball bat to the back of the head? Did they just call it natural causes? Maybe this is the first year where they were like, maybe we should look into this thing.
Yeah, called a Whitechapel thunderstorm.
Yeah, something like that.
So the entire month of October, not a single murder, but on November 9th, 1888, Jack would strike one final time in his most disgusting display of brutality yet with the murder of Mary Jane Kelly. Mm. See, Mary was different than all of the other victims. First, she was younger, clocking in at 25, as opposed to the others who were all in their 40s. Second, she was extremely attractive by all accounts, whereas the others were a bit more on the rough side, what with the missing teeth and all.
Well, you know, extremely attractive in comparison.
Whitechapel.
Like if you're a Whitechapel,
she is a victim. Mary Kelly was a beautiful woman. She had a promising future.
But also, it's why her death gets the most attention and why the most conspiracy theories hinge on this death. We're also because of the way she died as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And third, Mary had her own room rather than the four penny coffins at the lodging houses which she had rented for the last 8 months of her life. And that would be the room that she was murdered in, rather than all the other victims who were all murdered on the street or in backyards. Mary had shared that room in Spitalfields with a fish porter named Joseph Barnett. But as Joseph was often unemployed, Mary resorted to prostitution to support the two quite often. Joseph stuck around until Mary invited a homeless prostitute to share the room, at which point Joseph moved out but stayed on friendly terms with Mary.
Or was sexually obsessed with her to the point where he went ahead to kill a bunch of prostitutes in Whitechapel to discourage her from going back to prostituting, to pull her back into living with him. Ha ha!
Hong Kong, next episode. Suspect, next episode.
You keep jumping ahead. Stay on target.
Good for his exercise, though. That's good. It's good that he can still jump. It's nice.
Now, that room, located on Dorset Street, was only 12 square feet with a fireplace opposite the door, two windows to the left, and a bedside table so close to the door that it would bang against the door when the door was opened.
That's a good place for the fireplace, opposite the door, as opposed to right by the door, so when you open the door, it immediately catches that fire. God damn it! Poop with the fireplace!
The only decorations were a couple of engravings and a painting called The Fisherman's Widow.
Which is really sad, because you're... boyfriend's a fisherman. Yeah. Your boyfriend's a fisherman. You have a painting saying The Fisherman's Widow, which is basically like, I hope you get murdered.
I hope you die, yeah.
Mary was reported to be a quiet woman until she got drunk, at which point she would sing Irish songs and get into fights, becoming what her friends referred to as Dark Mary.
Oh, I love Dark Mary. That's the only Mary I would ever want to hang out with.
That was her Chris Gaines.
Yes.
Now, the last song Dark Mary was heard to be singing the night of her murder was at 11:45 p.m. when a neighbor heard her singing the old Irish tune, A Violet from Mother's Grave. We've actually got...
Ooh.
Yeah.
We've got a recording, not a recording of Mary Kelly, but a recording of the song, A Violet from Mother's Grave. Let's hear it.
Scenes of my childhood arise before my gaze.
Actually, that song is used to very chilling effect in the Jack the Ripper Museum in London. Yeah, they've got an amazing room that is a recreation of Mary Kelly's room, and they play that an a cappella version of that on a loop over and over and over again.
It sounds like Meryl Streep's character in that horrendous film that she might win an Oscar for. Florence Jenkins or whatever. Oh, it was so bad.
I hate that movie.
Whitest movie I ever saw in my life.
But also, I can see how the endless loop of that song playing can curdle the minds of the people working at the museum. I was watching a documentary yesterday called Jack the Ripper, Suspect Uncovered. And it was... it had a historian, a Whitechapel, like, historian woman, and she's just dressed in a bonnet, like, walking around me like, oh, it was a right frame of time for a prosy to get snippity-snapped. And it's just like, you're all just, you have to go home. At some point, you have to go home to your family, and you're still like this.
Yeah, I'm not sure who decided that was a good pitch for the human ear, but it's at least it's music. It was something that...
Today's sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is Crizal No Glare Lenses. And thank you, Crizal, for sponsoring us today. If you wear glasses, then you know that fingerprints, smudges, scratches, and glares can obstruct your vision and be a huge distraction. That's why I love Crizal No Glare Lenses. They give you the clearest vision possible by offering resistance to glares, scratches, and smudges. That means no more fingerprint smudges from taking your glasses on and off, or scratches from cleaning your lenses on your shirt. Better yet, no more blinding glare created by your digital devices, so you can see everything on your screen, even if you're working at night. Crizal lenses even protect your eyes against harmful blue-violet light of your digital screens. And because Crizal No Glare Lenses stay clear, and reduce distracting glare, your friends and family can actually see your eyes, not just your glasses. Look better, feel better, and most importantly, be prepared for whatever comes your way with clear vision. Go to crizal.com to learn more. That's C-R-I-Z-A-L.com and start living life in the clear. Now, at 2 a.m., Mary Kelly was seen by a man named George Hutchinson on Commercial Street. She asked him for sixpence, but when he told her he had nothing to give, she said she needed to make some money and walked away. Hutchinson said he saw a man tap her on the shoulder and say something, at which point they both started laughing as the man put his arm around Mary's shoulder. The two then walked away together. Now, the last thing anyone would hear from Mary Jane Kelly would be three cries of, "Oh, murder!" at 4 a.m., heard by a neighbor from Mary's apartment. But once again, nobody paid it any more mind than they had with the death of Mary Nichols.
And I ask an inappropriate question.
Of course.
Is it possible that the "Oh, murder" is the sound she made when she orgasmed?
No.
And it was
I knew that's what the question was going to be. It's
I actually have a question now that Henry, that's it. Now, is it possible it was the sound of her orgasming? Is that possible, Marcus? Because that's actually an interesting question.
No, it's no, because she was
Henry.
A
you
prostitute.
Had a question.
It's inappropriate, but. Maybe "Oh, murder" is the sound she made when she orgasmed.
Huh, that is an interesting question. Marcus, what do you say to that? I don't never
it's
thought of it.
It's possible. In the world of Jack the Ripper, anything is possible.
It's possible.
Fucking monsters. Now, Jack the Ripper began with Mary Kelly, as he did with all of his victims, with a deep slash to the throat, this time down to the bone. Although, as the cry of "Oh, murder" demonstrated, Jack may have relished a bit more in frightening his victim before killing her this time. The extent of the mutilation the Ripper performed on Mary as she lay in her own bed makes it nearly impossible to tell the exact order of the slaughter. It may be that the killer had escalated to the highest level, or it could be that the Ripper did to Mary what he would have done to any of his victims had he had the time and privacy.
I think it was that. I think what you're saying is right, is that he actually had a room to do the crime in, and he had time.
Right.
Because what we now know about product killers is that they formulate their whole life around getting look at Ted Bundy, right? Ted Bundy went and he had that secluded area that he would drop the bodies off with so that he could have just uninterrupted time with the bodies. Ed Gein's house.
Right.
It's like you have these times. So in my head, when I look at it, it's that because what did we learn again from Jeffrey Dahmer? There's no real peak of escalation. At some point, there's just despair. But at that point, Jeffrey Dahmer was becoming like a dark magic lord in his mind.
He built
over
an altar.
These bodies.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, he had
so
built
he
a
was,
full altar in his apartment.
So there was more room to go for Jack the Ripper if he wanted. So I feel like this is just an example of he had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So this is what he actually did to Mary Kelly. He skinned her thighs and hacked away at the muscle before mutilating her arms in the same way. He opened the stomach and removed the intestines, laying them to the right side of her body. He took out the spleen and set it to the left, with the liver being set between her feet. He cut off her breasts and set one by her right foot. The other he set under her head with her uterus and kidneys. Mm. As opposed to the seemingly careful mutilation of Catherine Eddowes, the Ripper hacked away at Mary Kelly's face until she could only be identified by her eyes and her ears. Mm. The only thing Jack the Ripper took with him from Mary Kelly's room was Mary Kelly's heart.
Oh, my goodness. And a bunch of memories, I guess.
I guess he did.
What a disgusting. I don't know what to say.
I wanted to make disgusting. A joke about Tony Bennett's "Left My Heart in San Francisco," but I don't think
that's
also.
No, we're not doing that. No, that is so. I mean, this is what he would have done to all, or something similar.
Yeah.
If he had the time.
I mean, and it's also possible that you know, with Catherine Eddowes, you know, he made the slits in her eyelids.
Right.
He did the little V's underneath her eyes. I mean, it could be that he started to work on Mary Kelly in the exact same way, but then just kept going. like further and further and further and further.
So now,
at the time, and we also saw Liz Stride. He cut off the tip of her nose, and what a lot of people point to is that this is indication that he had some sort of venereal disease, that he was possibly had syphilis, which a lot of time involves face rot, like the tip of your nose falls off, you get these weird calluses and boils all over your face, and so there's this idea that a part of the killings were revenge for giving him some sort of disease, or he believed that a prostitute gave him a sexually transmitted disease, and so he was doing that as a kind of symbolic, like, fuck you.
Well, we should expand on that for the next episode, too. That's interesting.
Very interesting. That's a big part of my favorite pet theory.
I mean, as far as the actual dying goes, it's pretty quick for the victims.
It's every single time it is immediate. That's what he does. He wants to, he slits their throat as fast as he can so he can get to the body, because all he cares about.
So he's a product killer.
Yeah.
He wants the product.
It's also like Richard Chase, Richard Chase, those people died almost instantly. He kills them as fast as he possibly can because it's not about the kill. It's not like Andre Chikatilo, who really relishes the hunt of it. That's what makes him hard. With these guys, it is all about killing them as soon as they possibly can. Because like Dahmer didn't really kill anybody in a particularly brutal fashion.
He would get himself blackout drunk.
Yeah.
Right? In order to even do it. The whole point was just to get, because it's about control.
Yeah.
Well, it's about having
possession of someone.
He did drill bits in people's brains.
He did do the drill bit and the acid in the brain and all that. But that was
pretty extreme.
That was his open mic time.
Working on his tight five.
On the other hand, somebody like Gacy relished in tricking them. Doing the tying the rope trick and all that type of shit, and then strangling him. He was all about the process of it. Mary Kelly's body was found at 10:45 a.m. by Thomas Indian Harry Bowyer, her landlord's assistant. Now, upon getting no answer from knocking on the door to collect rent, Indian Harry looked through the window and saw the horrific scene. Police showed up with Baxter Phillips, who took one look in the window and said,
"I'm satisfied that the mutilated corpse lying on the bed was not in need of any immediate attention from me."
Was that a joke by the detective who found a woman lying on her own breast?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, his funny little last podcast on the left joke that he made.
Interesting. Just like your father used to tell jokes like that all the time, Henry.
Absolutely. Cops have very dark senses of humor.
Yes.
Now, the constables waited outside for 2 hours, thinking they would soon be joined by a pair of bloodhounds that the Metropolitan Police had commissioned to aid in the capture of Jack the Ripper should another murder occur. That's what they thought, is that if a murder occurs, we can bring out the bloodhounds, they can get on the scent, and we can zip them after the Ripper and find this guy. Only thing was, the bloodhounds, named Burgo and Barnaby, cute names for little dogs.
They were wearing little hats and smoking little pipes.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, gosh, they're so funny. Well, it takes them longer to get ready because they got to put 4 shoes on. They are fun.
I like them.
Yeah.
Well, Burgo and Barnaby were 200 miles away with their owner, who, when no murder had occurred in the month of October, he'd just gotten bored and decided to go home without telling anybody.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So at 1:30 p.m., police, when they finally found out no bloodhounds were coming, they opened the locked door with an axe and found Mary lying in the middle of the bed with her shoulders flat, her legs open, and her head turned on the left cheek.
Interesting that the door was locked from the inside.
Very interesting. Yes. Although it would have been extremely easy to reach the arm end through the broken window.
If they did it.
Because there was one of her windows was broken.
Was it the one next to the door?
Yeah, because it was a 12 by 12 room. It was tiny. The window was right next to the door.
Maybe he escaped through the
fireplace. How long is the guy's arms?
I don't know,
Henry. That's the whole point. We don't know.
I need to see some measurements.
Measurements. Reverse Santa Claus, escape through the fireplace. Go up it. Yeah, reverse that.
No, a photographer was brought in, and that photographer took the very first crime scene photo ever taken in England, a photo that is still one of the most famous and gruesome ever to be taken. Now, here's a few things about this murder scene. It is odd that the final murder occurred inside. Could it be that the Ripper chose Mary specifically because she had a home? Or did he just get lucky? How many women did he try before Mary Kelly? Did he go out that night looking for somebody with a private room? Did it just so happen that he asked Mary Kelly and Mary Kelly took him to this private room? And is it a coincidence that the one who got it the worst was also the youngest and the only one who was conventionally attractive? Or could it be that Mary Kelly wasn't murdered by the Ripper at all?
Every time I hear the words, could it be, I just immediately imagine ancient aliens be like, but could it be the screams of the innocent were fueling a spacecraft?
We'll answer these questions and more in our final episode of Jack the Ripper.
Oh, my God.
And I'll tell you what. Even though people have written literally hundreds of books about Jack the Ripper, and each one has their own separate, completely decades-long research answer, which are also completely different from each other books, we are going to come up with the conclusive answer to the identity of Jack the Ripper next week.
Yeah, I'm going to figure it out by Thursday.
The fat guy from Nuns on the Run and Julia Childs
worked together, and they were fucking each other in the meanwhile.
Absolutely. All right. Well, great. Great episode. Fun stuff. I want to say thank you to everybody who came out to our show in Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
It was so awesome meeting everyone. So cool.
And I will say, I just want to say, I did not get Philadelphia fever
from anybody
in that whole town. So congratulations.
And to the couple who asked me to work their wedding, if that can work, I would love to officiate the wedding.
Yeah.
It'll be a wonderful time.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun, man. We got to get you all worked up with, what is it, the Metropolitan Life Church?
Yes, I'll do that. I now pronounce you man and dog. Oh, that's not my wedding. Never mind. I would love to marry a dog, but you can't do it.
You want to marry a dog. What you're saying.
I would.
You want to marry a dog.
Yeah, because then you're only married for a maximum of like 11 years because dogs die young.
That's why you date someone. You've got to marry someone with cancer.
Yes, or an elderly person.
You get a tragic end.
Yeah.
Oh, that and then you're single with a sad edge.
That's right. Yeah, Philadelphia, so awesome. What a great union transfer, great venue. And my God, it was such an honor. And it's always so wonderful just talking to everyone.
Yeah. And speaking of which, this Saturday, we're going to be in Kansas City, Missouri, playing at Panic Fest. We're doing two shows. There are still a couple of tickets left for our late show, but those will sell out before Saturday. So just Google Panic Fest Kansas City, and they've got links to the tickets on their site. Chicago, we're coming after that. Can't wait to see everybody there. We're sold out. And St. Paul, Minnesota on February 25th. We just added a second show. We're going to be doing a late show in St. Paul, and tickets for that are going to go on sale at noon tomorrow. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, you already have access to those tickets right now, because everybody who donates just $1 or more to our Patreon gets early access to every single one of our live show tickets. So if you go to patreon.com/lastpodcastonthelift and give even $1, you're going to be helping us out so much, and you're going to get a little bit of something in return. Thanks to everybody who's given to our Patreon so far.
Yes.
It's fucking fantastic.
Also, I'm looking for the hot leads as to what's the best barbecue place in Kansas City. I've been told Oklahoma Joe's. And we're supposed to go to the gas station location, which is what I'm very much so excited for. That's really the thing I'm most excited for.
The gas station location is like a Wawa or something.
No. It's like a guy doing barbecue in a parking lot of a gas station.
Yeah.
Supposed to be
For barbecue.
Yeah, there's a good gas station barbecue joint in Texas. It's like kind of a chain. It's called Rudy's. You can get barbecue and gas.
God. Well, look at that. And then the barbecue gives you gas. So that's kind of fun. Is it Monday? I hate Mondays.
And go to cavecomedyradio.com/live to see dates for live shows in St. Louis, Ithaca, Salt Lake City, and San Francisco.
Yes. And thanks so much for supporting all the shows here on CCR. We're absolutely crushing it. We got some new products coming.
Products.
So take a listen to Able Against Top Hat for everything political. It really is helping people out and to deal with with this madness, the new reality that we're currently all sort of living in now.
Alex Jones is going to be in the correspondence room.
Juice boxes make kids gay. He is absolutely
He's legit now. Congratulations,
yeah,
everyone.
So that's the world we're living in. We will navigate it together. Page 7 for all your entertainment needs. Roundtable of Gentlemen for all the good, weird news stories. And Wizard of the Bruiser, check out Holden's show. He's been working really hard on that. It's literally the only thing he knows about is video games. So give him a listen.
No, it's video games and all kinds of nerd stuff and all that. It's super cool. Yeah, and check out the other shows on Cave Comedy Radio, Movie Sign with the Mads, with a couple of guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000, Stupid Human Suits, which is all about death and dying
it's
and all
that. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
I like that show.
It's a fucking great show. It's brand new. So yeah, just go to cavecomedyradio.com and check out all of our shows on the network.
Also, Last Stream on the Left is on adultswim.com. Look for the live streams tab. We're on 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Fridays. We're doing that shit. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, and follow Last Podcast on the Left on everything at LP on the Left.
Yes, that's great.
And also, 5 stars on iTunes.
Please, that would be great. Honestly, rate and review all the shows. It only helps us. We're going to beat these huge corporations that are trying to pretend like they're organic. They're not organic. We're the Grassroots Podcast Network.
Fuck yeah, and man. Cave Comedy Radio, the only DIY one out there.
And it's all because of you guys.
We're the only one.
Yeah.
We're the only one in the top 10 at any time. So keep it going, please, for us. We got to beat the fucking the machine.
Yeah.
All right? And get off fucking Facebook because they're collecting our data. Fucking cover your camera on your goddamn fucking laptop for the next 4 years. You better fucking do it.
I always cover your camera unless you're using it for masturbatorial reasons, in which case uncover it and let them see your face.
Let them see your face. Let them look at it.
Yeah, let them see my awful half-bored masturbation face.
Well, mine, I'm always just like lying there, and right before I am, you know, doing my thing, I say, oh, murder! It's kind of wild. Murder! Murder! Oh, murder! Kind of wild there.
Well, they call it the little death in French. That's the term for coming.
Is it really?
Yeah.
The little death.
The little death.
Isn't that fun? The French are an interesting bunch.
Aren't they?
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. Magustalations.
And hail Gayan.
Hail me, if you would. Hail me first.
And hail yourself. And hail yourselves. Okay.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.